All right, let me get a mic.
And 286.
286, that's right.
All right.
Your
show of shows.
Your show, just like last week. Also your show.
The end was. You can wrap up the end of this week.
It's fine.
You feel good.
It's fine. You did a good job.
It's part of your community service work. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Sneaky Dragon. I'm Ian Boothby.
And I'm David Dedrick.
And welcome back to our 200...
Thank you.
To you, absolutely. Oh, okay. To our 286th episode. Dave is the only one I know has listened to all of these episodes. The only one I can guarantee has listened to every one of them.
No, that's not true.
You haven't listened to any of...
Episode 7 I didn't listen to.
Well, you were part of it, so you were listening to it as
No, I didn't pay attention at all that entire episode.
Okay, fair enough.
That was the quality of shows you brought to that. No,
that was when you brought your ventriloquist dummy, little Davey.
Oh, we're bringing ventriloquist dummy.
Davey O'Dave.
Yeah, Davey O'Dave.
Had him do the whole show. And the audience didn't know that, but I just saw you in a grimace through the whole thing.
That's right.
Big smile.
Hi, Ian.
That's right.
How are you?
And if you remember that episode, that was one where Dave sang a lot for no reason, and it sounded like water gurgling while he was singing.
Not the only show I grimaced through.
Oh, hey, we're trying to do a nice podcast here, Davey O'Dave. Come on now, settle down. Anyway, did we mention on the show the mystery of that visual?
We brought it up, but we did not solve it.
We did not. Is it Danny O'Day, the name of the puppet?
Yeah, it's you. You're the one.
I think it is. Anyway, okay. Quick mystery solved. We were looking into Danny O'Day, which apparently was the most popular ventriloquist dummy
as a toy,
and we went like, oh, he looks a lot like Charlie McCarthy. What's the connection there?
Yeah.
And the connection was that both the original Charlie McCarthy and Danny O'Day were made by the same ventriloquist dummy manufacturer or artist.
Yes.
And so, but they went to different ventriloquists and both became fairly popular and both look almost exactly alike except for a monocle. But, you know, Charlie McCarthy went on to be more fame.
I thought you meant the ventriloquist looked alike.
Oh, all ventriloquists look alike.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Danny became the most popular ventriloquist doll for sale for kids who wanted to do ventriloquism.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So did they ever market Charlie McCarthy or Mortimer Snert?
Like they were crazy marketed? They did. Okay. Oh, absolutely they
But they weren't as popular.
They marketed the hell out of those guys.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm not sure who was the first. You know what? I'm gonna lay a bet down that that was one of the most successful marketed showbiz characters, first of all. Like, I'd say, like, you know, get yourself one of these Charlie McCarthy dolls.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's interesting that at that time, like, I sort of know this because my friend had a Snow White. It was a plastic detergent holder. So if you got a box of detergent, you would put it into this plastic holder, and it had a handle on it.
Yes.
And then you could pour the
powder out.
It sounds
like a Canadian milk bag holder.
Kind of similar idea.
Don't get those two confused, or you're going to have very clean cereal and be dead.
On this.
And very milky socks.
On this was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, but it was not a trademark Disney product. Someone just took the image of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and made them into this.
Did they
holder.
Alter them at all?
Not
to
at
make
all.
Them, oh, they look just like Disney.
Just like them. And when I was looking at it, I was thinking, this is interesting. So there was a time when you could kind of get away with borrowing trademarked images and reproducing them. I don't know if it was a Canadian thing that they did in Canada.
Well,
so they thought, no one's going to pay attention in the States to what we're doing up here.
Right.
But yeah, it was
interesting. Or what is the price you have to pay then for getting caught doing that? Like
I really don't know because I have a friend who's sister, her job is to go around and make sure people aren't doing this. You know, she goes around and stops pirating of Walt Disney merchandise. And that was the reason the RCMP, if you remember, it was so shocking one time that they signed some sort of contract with Disney,
right,
to produce RCMP, whatever you call it, memorabilia? Not memorabilia.
Sure, merchandise.
Merchandise, yes. But everyone was like, what's going on? But the reason they did that was because it was already being pirated, and Disney were the best at stopping pirated merchandise, and so they could control what was being sold as RCMP.
No, I think I've brought this up on previous shows. I never understood how, you know, for Disney being so litigious,
yeah.
How is Mighty Mouse still around? Because that guy looks just like Mickey Mouse. Like, you know, in a way, that widow's peak. He's got that framed face. Like, the elements that make him look like Mickey Mouse, you take away, you put him in a suit, and you put Mickey in a suit side by side.
Yeah.
That looks like the same guy, except he's more chesty.
And that, I think he's a little bit of a different design. His face is different.
When you look at how he doesn't have Disney went after Marvel for Howard the Duck and how much of an issue they had with that guy, like it's really surprising that you never went after Mighty Mouse.
Yeah, I think, once again, just a different time, you know? And I don't think that they're that similar myself. I don't think in terms of like how they're drawn or...
You don't think their faces look exactly alike?
No, I don't.
Is there any... What's the difference between a Mickey Mouse face and a Mighty Mouse face?
Well, Mighty Mouse's face is a little narrower and he's got a longer nose.
Okay.
He's brown. He's not black and like not the same colors as Mickey Mouse. And the eyes are different. His eyes are... Or did Mickey's eyes change? Did Mickey's eyes become like the white with... Because I was thinking Mickey is having like
the... There's two Mickey Mouses. There's the Mickey Mouse that has the pupils in round eyes, and there's the one that just has the black pupils, the classic Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
By the way, classic Mickey Mouse, I think there is actually an argument to be made that you can use that one. That one, I think, has gone a little public domain. At the very least, some of the things that he's done, that he's been in that look like that, you're allowed to do. I'm going to bring up a picture of Mighty Mouse and see what you think. If, you're going to, take your words back. From you.
I will never take my words back.
Okay. Well, that guy looks a little chubby cheeked.
He looks different to me. Doesn't look the same. His ears are different. It's quite a bit different. Mickey Mouse is a simpler design, and in a way a better design than Mighty Mouse.
Okay.
Call up Mickey Mouse.
Bring up Mickey Mouse?
Bring up Mickey Mouse, and let's have a...
All right, we're going to bring up Mickey Mouse. Here we go. This is great, all this visual
stuff. This is great.
Stuff.
You guys, I hope at home you're also Googling Mighty Mouse and Mickey Mouse.
Well, I
you're on your phone.
I would hope so. There's your standard Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, it's totally different. It's totally different.
And in no way is it totally different.
It is completely, I think 100%, besides them both being mice, having ears
and because a tail. Here's what mice don't have in real life.
Yeah.
They don't have a widow's peak. They don't have a widow's peak and like a Caucasian-style face surrounded by black ears. That's not what a mouse looks like. That is just a design
choice. It's a common animal drawing, a funny animal drawing
style.
Well,
what it is a minstrel drawing, really, from the original Mickey Mouse.
You could argue that you are basing it on styles that existed before Mickey Mouse, if it came to that.
Well, you could go with Oswald the Lucky Rabbit.
There you go.
You could go with a little of that, sure, if you wanted to.
Even non-Disney things, you could bring up characters that existed before.
Okay, and let me do a side thing here and go like, and DC Comics, who went after Captain Marvel for having the same powers as Superman, hey, Mighty Mouse is there. You got no problem with Mighty Mouse at all? So both DC Comics and Disney both looked at Mighty Mouse and went, nah, who cares?
He's fine.
Yet, multiple cartoons, been around, all over merchandise, no problem. I don't know why, but that's my
Because thing. It looks different.
Fair enough. Let's go to plugs real fast off the top of the show. If you feel like listening to me, but in person, where you could sit in the audience and go, hey, stop it. I got two shows coming up next week. May 30th, I'm doing a show called Comic Books Live, where I'm doing that at the Havana. That's, again, May 30th. It's going to be 8 o'clock. It's going to be fun. What we're going to do is take public domain characters, female comic book characters from the 30s and 40s, and we're going to pick them randomly, and then we're going to create scenes based on them.
Cool.
So that's going to be a really good time. Sort of loosely based on Hope Nicholson's book, Spectacular Sisterhood of Superwomen. She listed all these great characters in there that just loved.
Give me one name. One name you like.
Maureen.
Marine.
Yeah, now what she
could I guess that she is an underwater character?
She is. What happened? How come she's underwater?
She tried to commit suicide, and instead of drowning, she became an underwater dwelling person.
That is not true, but I will say this. It's in the 40s, so who do you think is to blame for the situation that she got into? Being the 40s, who is to blame for every problem?
The good old Nazis.
Bang on. Nazis attacked her family, sunk her boat. She fell underwater, was rescued by a race of mermen, and became their leader.
What? Really?
Yeah, became their leader. And the drawings...
That's a very strange political system they have, the mermen have.
Well, they had no women. She was the only one. So again, as Hope says, let's ignore the future. She's 15 right now, and we're just going to have her lead the mermen. Mm-hmm. Things try to attack Atlantis, and she defends against them, and it's really beautiful art, like amazing.
Yeah.
Like, look up Maureen. And you'll go, oh, you're right, that is beautiful stuff. And there's all these characters that are like that, that are just like, well, that's a really good idea. It's all public domain, so what the hell? Let's do it.
It's kind of rare at that time, isn't it? If it's
nice beautiful art.
Beautiful art.
Yeah, it is. It is rare.
So look, covers are often nice.
Yep.
Then you open it up and you're just like, ugh, who puked on this page?
Exactly. Now I'll do the second plug real fast.
Second plug.
May 31st, Critical Hit Show. You know what I'm talking about there. Oh, Critical Hit Show. Yep. That is our live-action role-playing game at the Rio Theater, once again, at 8 o'clock. And,
so let me just get this straight. You guys play Settlers of Catan on stage.
No, we play, well, Catan, but with a K. It's the knockoff dollar store version. We had to settle for the Settlers of Catan. And who else is going to be in that? Well, that's Eric Fell, and that is Sean Stewart. Why am I just bringing them up and not everyone else? They're all a lot of people. Well, I'm just going to bring it up because...
Barbara Beale?
Those are... What's that? Yeah, there's a lot of people. We could, but now I got to name everybody.
Yeah, you're
going to make me do that. No, I'm not going to do that. But those two fellas just did a Mystery Science Theater episode called Cry Wilderness that is basically being widely regarded as the best of the Netflix version of
the new
of the new run.
Yeah.
And is
good for them.
People are ranking it with like some of the better Mystery Science Theaters as well. And I agree with them. They did a really nice job. So if you want to see those guys live.
They have their own thing that they do, right? The Gentlemen Hecklers, where they do a Mystery Science Theater style live show at the Rio as well. With Patrick Maliha, who I believe also was a writer on that
episode. And Joel Hodgson has given his blessings on that and has plugged their show many times.
It's very funny.
Yeah, it's a very funny show.
MST3K is also very funny.
Well, very funny show. But I didn't name MST3K, and I did name the Gentlemen Hecklers. So I got a little bit of point of pride for that.
I think you're getting a little, you got a little percentage on the side? A little
I 10%? Get it when I'm the substitute when one of them gets the flu.
Oh, okay.
And I go in and I go, this is a lot of fucking work. Jeez, there's a lot of writing to do in this. Improv, that's the ticket. That's the ticket. You got it. Yeah.
So when it comes to improv, you're all over that. You do your comic book live.
I'm doing comic books live, on the May 30th and Critical Hit Show on May 31st.
That's two shows in two nights.
Oh, shit, you're right. No, fuck it. I'll just figure out one to do then.
Powerhouse.
Yeah.
Vancouver Powerhouse.
What a powerhouse. I am. Back to art from the 30s and 40s. It depended what they were coming from. You know, if they were coming from like... if you're coming from an illustration background, you know, you might just have really beautiful art that might not be effective storytelling. It might not flow really well, but really be gorgeous to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Or you might be someone who's rough and tumble, but really move a story along.
Yeah.
Like you look at the first Action Comics and Joe Shuster, bless him, bless his Canadian heart.
Yes.
It's not the greatest art in the world.
It is not.
But
it's serviceable.
But it moves things along, and you buy the concept, and you're as a kid, you're able to project yourself into that simplified image. And hey, we're Superman today, not Sue and Mighty Mouse. I'll tell you that much.
the problem with that, of course, is that Siegel then became the standard that you could drop down from, you know, and so you end up with a. I have a collection of covers. It has like Lou Fine, very well known artist of that time period, and beautiful covers. But I know for a fact that when I'm looking at these covers, that if I had bought this comic and opened it up, that I would not be happy with what I saw inside it. There was exceptions, obviously. Yeah, there's people like Will Eisner and people like that produced art. But it seemed like you had to like move out of the 30s into the late 40s in order for there actually to be.
But Eisner got, when you're thinking Eisner, you're thinking of the really beautiful Eisner.
Yes.
You're not thinking of like the early Eisner.
No, that's
which
right.
Was, like still rough and tumble. Mm-hmm. Like. That person's style really improved fast, you know, and got gorgeous. Same with the Kirby, like early Kirby. Like, it's fine. Then it goes, I see where you're going with this.
Well, the really good artists went into newspaper strips because that's where the money was, and that's where the action was, and that's where, you know, and you still had nice, you know, like Prince Valiant could be a whole page of beautiful art by Hal Foster, you know, so that's... You know, just gorgeous.
Now, back
page.
Then, did people buy Prince Valiant collections? Was that a thing?
No, it was not a thing.
That seems
but the first
strange.
Comics, the first comic books were
by Bill Gaines.
Were collections of like the first like kind of popular comics were collections of newspaper strips put into comic book form,
which were done by Bill Gaines.
Is that right?
That's right.
Educational comics. I thought his first comics were kind of like historical, like I say, educational.
I believe,
comics.
Okay, here's what I have been told about Bill Gaines, which is he was also the creator of Mad Magazine.
It was his dad who did the original.
That's right, that's what
original.
I'm talking about. Oh, I'm sorry about that. Fuck. Yeah, there you go. You know what, guys? Come up with new names. It's confusing.
And he didn't create Mad Magazine. That was Harvey Kurtzman.
Do you think he created it on his own?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
He brought it to William Gaines and said, I have an idea for a comic.
And William Gaines didn't have anything to do with it past that point? No creative
output? No. No, he didn't have any creative output except in the... He didn't have anything to do with like the editing of like Kurtzman's books. Okay. Kurtzman entirely did them on his own. That's why they're like.
What I'm hearing
so
right now
different.
Is that I know nothing. Let's go. William Gaines first.
But
let's
you're
just
right
go,
that he had a part to play right. in the.
But
in,
let's
like,
go with William Gaines' father. He, what I've been told, and take me to a Wikipedia page, goddammit, that he was the first person to basically take the newspaper strips, assemble them yeah. together, and yeah. sell them. At newsstands as a separate item.
Yes.
Which
is a good idea.
And so in that way, he was called the father of the comic book.
Yeah.
All right. And now his son, you know,
William Gaines.
William Gaines, who created Mad Magazine because the horror field that EC Comics was doing got kind of shut down because of the. Am I wrong?
It already existed.
What's that?
Mad Magazine already existed before the shutdown.
But in the form that Mad Magazine became, or as in... Because there was like 6 issues or whatever of Mad Magazine that were... If you look at them, you go, that's very different than the Mad Magazine
that's
that you
right.
saw later on.
That's right. He had to change the format to okay. escape the censors.
And was it called Tales Calculated to Drive You Mad? Was that the first official title, or was it actually called Mad?
It's called Mad, and then they had that there as a
okay, so it wasn't the full...
Because it says of like Tales in the Jocular Vein or whatever. And
why I'm asking is like, I was wondering if the title was Tales Calculated to Drive You Mad, as in it's Tales of the Crypt. Tales of the Crypt is not just called Crypt, but with Tales of the Above. So I'm not sure if the first one was actually had that as its full name.
Tales from the Crypt. Yeah, I guess that's what. Haunt of Fear. Vault of Horror.
Vault of... Is it horror or terror?
Or Vault of Terror, maybe. Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think of them now.
And, now I'm trying to think of the
but
hosts.
Kurtzman was... Like, Kurtzman edited his own books and had very little to do with... Like he didn't use that what do they call that style of... There's a name for that type of printing that they had in the EC books. It was just like a mechanical...
You mean the text?
The text, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas it's a little hard to read, a little off-putting.
But Kurtzman's books were hand-lettered mm-hmm. in the traditional comic book style. He did not like that mechanical style. And so he did Two-Fisted Tales and Frontline Combat. And those books were hand-lettered. And then he started... But the reason he started Mad was because both Two-Fisted Tales and Frontline Combat involved a lot of research into the stories in order to make them believable. So then, and he was trying to draw from history for a lot of the stories. And so then, so that he started Mad as just an easy outlet. They didn't have to do any research to make up dumb stories and make fun of Archie or make fun of Superman and stuff like that. So that's why he started Mad Magazine. It was just an easy way to increase his pay without having to go to the trouble of having to do more research. Yeah.
So at what point did Bill Gaines Jr.? Are they both named William Gaines? Was it Will Gaines?
I'm not
Sr.
sure what
Jr.?
It is. I don't know what his father's
name. So at what point did Bill Gaines Jr. kind of take the reins? Was it when Harvey left?
Well, actually, the editorship fell to another editor there, Feldstein.
Al Feldstein?
Yeah, I guess that's his name.
Okay.
Yeah. He took over the editing of Mad Magazine. So he became like the
long-term
editor.
And as a publisher,
editor.
Bill had no say.
Oh, no, I'm sure he had lots to say. You know, I'm sure at that point he had more to do with it than he did. Because Harvey Kurtzman was not a, he was a notoriously controlling writer and editor.
Right.
Like, you know, when you got a story from Harvey Kurtzman, you just didn't get a script. You got pages drawn out for you to follow, like in full page, like full comic book Bristol board with all the boxes put onto it, and then you know this and everything all laid out and how he wanted you to draw it, and he would kind of pre-draw it for you and then expect you to follow pretty closely what he did.
Okay. And can you all right you seem to have a knowledge of this kind of thing, what are the Harvey Kurtzman books that followed after Mad Magazine, or magazines that followed after Mad? Which ones did he
Humbug,
okay,
Trump, and then Help.
And that was it?
That was all, yeah. Each one was not very successful.
And why weren't they successful? What did they miss out on that Mad Magazine had?
Well,
or was it that Mad already existed, so they didn't need a Mad
Magazine?
Yeah,
I think that's part of it. It's that, you know, like, you, it's kind of like if you get mad at your friends and you leave the band and you start your solo career, you'll never be as popular as that band, you know, because you built up that... You built up that label, you built up that name, and now you can't just go out as Joe Schmo and expect people to go, oh, Joe Schmo, he's from the such and such. That doesn't work that
way.
Doing
the same type of music.
Doing the same type of music. It just doesn't work that way. And so when he left, I mean, and he took some of the really good artists with him. I mean, Al Jaffe went with him, Will Elder, obviously, Jack Davis, Wally Wood. They all went with him to do Humbug.
Later.
A lot of them went back to Mad, because Mad and EC paid so well for pages. They paid, I think, almost triple what other publishers paid for a page as a page rate. Partly because their stories were shorter, so you might get you might do like a 7-pager or in a like a, because their magazines are mostly anthologies, so you wouldn't have like one artist drawing a whole issue. Yeah. You'd have a variety of different artists drawing. So yeah, when he left, and partly he was lured away from Mad by Hugh Hefner, because Hefner loved Kurtzman, he loved Mad magazine, and he wanted to publish a Mad style magazine. So he waved a lot of money in front of Kurtzman, who was already kind of mad at Gaines for I don't know why, can't remember now. And so he left, he quit Help. Oh, because he wanted a share of Mad.
Okay.
He felt as the person who invented it, created it, he should get a bigger chunk of the Mad profits.
Okay.
And Gaines didn't think so, because that was the publishing, comic book publishing in those days was me, you know, I'm the publisher, so that means I get everything, including your artwork and everything else that you do, and you get a dribs and drabs. That's just how it is. So when Kurtzman wanted to up his percentage of ownership on Mad, Gaines would not go that way, and so Kurtzman left. So he went with Hefner, but the problem was that although Hefner, you know, was publishing Playboy, he actually had, like, at some point, a real credit crunch, and he was super short on money, and so Humbug, I think, I'm pretty sure Humbug was the magazine that was published under Hefner, it collapsed because there was no money for it, and he had to cut somewhere, so he just cut all those guys loose. And so, yeah, they kind of all drifted back to Mad magazine. Then Kurtzman tried to self-publish Trump magazine. And that, you know, went okay. But, you know, once again, it's really expensive to do a magazine. You need, like, a lot of money to...
And if that had been successful, would we have Donald Trump today? Because he wouldn't have been able to put his name on anything. That would have been already copyrighted.
Yeah, that would have been... It's too bad.
Yep.
It's too bad. Because you look at, like, The New Yorker. Like, when Harold Ross started The New Yorker, he was really lucky because it was, like, at the height of the late 20s, and so there was all this money flowing around because the stock market was this insane monster, and so everyone was just printing money out of the, you know, in the back room of their house, and so, you know, there's lots of money for him, so he could float it for like a year and try and build up a readership. Yeah. You know, and that gave him sort of an up. But, you know, when Kurtzman started Trump, and partly also because the magazine market was sort of changing by the time he started, it was not like the all-consuming thing it once was, you know. Help magazine is similar again. It was another attempt to do a self-published magazine, but on the super cheap. But that's where, like, Terry Gilliam got a start.
Yeah.
And it was one of the first places that Robert Crumb was published. Kurtzman saw some of Crumb's drawings that he'd done while he was living in, I can't remember if he was living somewhere in, like, Eastern Europe. For some reason, he idealistically went over there to live and then realized, ugh, this is not so great. But anyway, while he was there, he did, like, a lot of sketches and stuff like that. Hopefully not like a full view of Secret Service, Russian Secret Service.
Yeah.
But he did all these sketches of like life behind the Iron Curtain. And so those were published in Help magazine. And John Cleese also appeared in Help magazine as well. They did like a fumetti. You know what fumetti is?
Yeah, it's where you take the photos and the captions.
That's right. And so he did one where he was in love with a Barbie doll. So John Cleese, I guess he was in New York touring one of the Footlights shows. They were on Broadway doing one of the Footlights Club related reviews or whatever, kind of like the same way Beyond the Fringe was like a big hit.
Sure.
So they're looking for other similar things, and so they toured this. And while he was in New York, he did this Help thing. I don't know. I guess someone saw him on stage and thought, oh, this guy would be good for this.
Yeah, he's got a good face for cartoons.
Mm-hmm. And then I assume that's where he met Gilliam.
Oh.
But I think Gilliam went over to England on his own.
Well, now you got me wondering. Now I got to look that up in one of the many Monty Python books I got.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Like when you're talking about how they didn't cut the people in on the royalties or what have you, I'm thinking about Sergio Aragonés and him talking to us, and we've met him a couple of times.
Yes.
And I've worked with him briefly at Bongo, and he was talking how a source of his income did get cut off, which was paperback books, because Mad Magazine was very popular as paperback books.
And I have so many paperbacks.
What he implied and or inferred was that he made quite a bit of money off of those paperback books. So I don't know if, you know, he got like a buyout from Mad or if he got a cut of that, but it felt like he got a cut of those.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I mean,
Gaines probably renegotiated his contract, too.
Well, like I say, Gaines wasn't...
When you're Sergio Aragonés, you can.
Gaines wasn't a really stingy guy. Like, he was generous to his artists and writers.
Yeah.
He paid well. It's just that...
He'd take them on crazy vacations.
But they did not own their artwork. He did not return their artwork to them. That was a property of EC Comics.
So where is that all that artwork now? Which is
I have no idea. Now that he's gone, I have no idea what... I mean, I assume he sold it and made a profit on it.
I never see any floating around. Have you ever seen any, like... No. What do you call them? The marginals. The Sergio Aragonés marginals.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever seen a marginal for sale anywhere? Like on any of the eBay sites?
Yeah.
Or any of those old... Not... Like, if you go back to, like, Super Duper Man, yes. Mm-hmm. Those kind of pages, yes. Mm-hmm. But as in something like, you know, their parody of the Poseidon Adventure or whatever, you never see any of those
for sale. You're right. I know.
You would think.
You would think that stuff would be out there. But
Drucker would be making some scratch.
Well, he wouldn't because he doesn't own that art.
Unless he does.
He doesn't.
But unless he did.
Maybe
he renegotiated later on.
No. No.
You don't think he renegotiated?
No, that was the reason that a lot of artists left MAD.
Well, how long did Mark Drucker stay? Mark Drucker was there...
Well, like, a lot of people just accepted it the way it was, but that's why, what's his face left?
Oh, what's his face? That guy.
The floppy-footed guy.
Don Martin.
Don Martin, yeah.
Floop. Kishnoink.
Yeah, he left.
Fladerp.
He left Mad Magazine and went to Crazy or whatever. Cracked.
Yeah.
Because he would own his artwork.
He didn't go to Crazy.
No one went to Crazy. He went to Plop.
No one went to Crazy.
He went to Plop Magazine.
Plop. I mean, Sergio Aragonés went to Plop.
Yeah, so did Basil Wolverton.
That was a Plop. Hi, everybody. This is a lot of rambling. If you like this kind of thing, enjoy. If you don't, there's other episodes to listen to.
Yep.
DC. That was DC Comics.
Yes, that's right.
And
it was a digest.
It was a digest. Well, no, it was a full comic as well.
Oh, I just remembered it as a digest.
Yeah, they republished some of them as digest, but it was like a full comic. And you're right.
I only bought digests.
But here was the weird thing about that. Was DC had a series of horror books like House of Mystery, House of Secrets,
yep.
And which had very Crypt Keeper
House of Haunted Houses,
House Shed next to House of Mystery, and they were hosted by Kane was the host of the House of Mystery,
of course
and
he would
Abel
be.
Was the host.
Why
of
Why was Abel there? It's not very fair.
We can talk about that later on. But they would host the horror stories, and then in Plop they would host. The comedy stories.
Oh, well, and natural.
And they would be drawn by Sergio Aragonés.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes the stories would be comedy horror.
Oh.
And so it was interesting. It was like a little bit of a part of their horror line, but not really. And later on, when House of Mystery stories got reprinted, they would take stories from Plop and insert them in there. And you're like, well, when was this part of it? And it wasn't. It was part of Plop, but because it's hosted by Kane,
yeah.
There you are.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, all I remember with Plop now is the cover drawings by
Basil Wolverton.
Yeah. Yeah. So those things will burn themselves into your brain.
They disturb you deep.
Oh, yeah.
Disturb you deep.
Yeah.
Speaking of things to disturb you deep, we're not going to give any spoilers for Twin Peaks, the new series, so don't worry about that. We're not going to do that. We're not going to be those kind of dinks. But I can say, I think, without spoiling, disturbing. Good and disturbing.
Yeah.
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 Really good. But one thing that
I'm so glad that Lynch has just been given free rein to do what he wants, and there's no one there saying, what are you going to show who the murderer is?
Why would you? Yeah, again, why would you take free rein from Lynch at this point? What does that gain?
But they've done it twice to him before. When he did Twin Peaks,
when it was on CBS.
But,
when it was on CBS.
Was it CBS? I thought it was NBC.
So. I think it was on CBS. Let me take a look.
It's probably on ABC, and we're both wrong.
I don't think that's possible. I think
I don't remember being on CBS, but I could be wrong.
Okay, well.
Anyway, so and then they did it to him again when he produced Mulholland Drive as a television pilot. There was supposed to be a TV series, and then the suit said, "You know what? This show is weird."
CBS.
Was it?
Yep.
Oh, I'm wrong, and they're also idiots. Yeah, I just it's just weird. Like, yeah, both times, and it seems weird to me that you'd be like, "Oh, David Lynch." Okay. I can understand with Twin Peaks them being surprised because he hadn't done like a lot by that point. He'd done Elephant Man, Dune, Blue Velvet. That's it.
Right.
So they're like, okay, this guy has done kind of a weird crime movie
and Elephant Man,
a great movie like Elephant Man.
Yeah, and Eraserhead as a
Eraserhead cult. Was an early one, so you can kind of.
But Eraserhead was one of those films that would be playing the cult circuit. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a cult circuit, and it was a midnight movie.
For sure.
Yeah.
And so they're like, okay, this guy's a pretty normal director. Like, we can hire him. And then when it starts to go the way it went, they're like, oh, wait, this is not commercial. People aren't going to like this.
And they don't care about people liking this. They care about the commercials
not liking it.
Yeah. You've said a mouthful there with the commercial thing, because what you care about as a network is sponsors.
Mm.
And now that it's on Showtime, it's the same deal as HBO, which is we don't care about sponsors because we don't have any.
Yeah.
Will people pay to see this? They will. do what the fuck you want as long as it's legal.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Go for it. There's no reason to have censorship, because that was the constraint they would have at CBS, was like, we got to put an ad for McDonald's in this.
Yeah.
And if you've just shown the guy eating the substance that's made out of human suffering, and then, you know, you got a McNugget coming up in your face, not so good.
But you could understand the surprise in that instance, I think. But by the time you get to Mulholland Drive, like, they should not be surprised at what they're getting. You know, like, if they hire...
Oh, you mean because it was a TV show first?
It was a TV show first, yeah. Right. Yeah, it was intended as a TV show. And when the pilot was refused, he took the pilot and he re-edited and reshot it, elements of it, to become a movie. But that's why there's a couple of plot elements that kind of fall to the wayside, just because they were going to continue, carry on in the series, but they had nowhere to go in the film, so he just kind of lets them drop. So it's a great film, but it's not a perfect film, just because there's a few kind of story parts where you're kind of like, what? Where did that go? And then where did that come from? And then go to, but like I say, they should not be like going, well, this is weird. I didn't expect David Lynch to do something weird. Did you guys expect him to be weird? Like, you can't say that by the time you get to Mulholland Drive. Like, if you hire that guy to do a pilot for you, for your stupid television network, and then it's weird, like, what did you expect?
Yeah, you want the idea of the person, not the person themselves.
Yeah.
And then you get Edgar Wright having to leave Ant-Man. And it's a drag.
You're still raw about that.
It's still bad. Well, it is, because like, there was a movie there that would have been really interesting. Mm-hmm. And Ant-Man's fine, but it could have been an Edgar Wright movie, and it would have been really interesting.
Would have been finer.
Yeah, it would have been finer. With Twin Peaks, here's the one thing I wanted to say about it was, whenever people talk about Watchmen, and God damn it, we've talked about Watchmen too much, the people who don't seem to really
let me be the judge of
like
that.
It as much, you know, or don't go, I don't get it. What's the point? Are the people that read it all in one go, like,
yeah,
pick up the thing
yeah.
and read it all.
Yeah.
And what they don't get, and it's old timers talking about what it was like, was how you had to wait a month in between.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of symbolism and a lot of little clues thing. Mm-hmm. And there was a mystery. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you got to talk with your friends and fill in the blanks and go, did this mean anything? What's this? And then there was a delay of it coming out. And so even more time to talk about it. And when it actually finished, it was like, I guess that's the, yeah, it's pretty good. Not bad. But you had such a great ride that you considered it an amazing thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing with Twin Peaks now, the new version, is because it's coming out every week. You know, people who like Twin Peaks, the majority of people, binge watched it already.
Yes, and they already watched all four episodes.
They watched all, I don't just mean those four. I mean the previous series. So Twin Peaks is great. Fantastic. Let me watch them all. That was pretty good. It's like, no, you don't get that the break in between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
And so right now, because they're going to be doing it every week until September, I think, you know, you're going to get more fill in the blanks, discussions, people online talking. Well,
it's such a different world now. Like when we grew up, there was no YouTubers who were doing like the hidden meanings of Twin Peaks pilot or, you know, like this didn't happen then. Like it was just us talking. And there may be a magazine article a couple times, but most part it was just people talking to each other. When they got to work the next day and saying, whoa, did you see that crazy show? That's something like a girl ended up in a dresser doorknob. Like, what? You know, like.
Yeah, but dresser, at that point, dresser people drawer were like, knob, are you still watching that show? Yeah, I'm sure the last episode will be good. Last episode was very
watched,
good.
I watched them all, right?
Oh,
to
I
the
watched them
end.
All, too.
And
it got a little bit. You know, again, because
it got bad because the network stepped in, interfered with the plans of the show. And so they had to, on the run, create a whole new show, basically, because what they were planning to do was taken away from them. David Lynch left in disgust, so he was out of the picture for a while. So it fell to the co-creator of the show, Mark Frost, to try to like stitch together a brand new show out of what he was left with.
Yeah,
and I think mistakes were made. They tried to like make it too big for what it was at that time, and it got a bit silly. I shouldn't say a little bit silly, a lot of bit silly. And yes, it's painful to watch a lot of that stuff. But I feel the same, but I still feel the same way about it that I felt when I watched the very first episode of Twin Peaks, which was when I first watched it. I did not like it very much. I was watching and I was just like, well, this is okay, I guess. It's a little droney. The music's okay. People are acting very strange. It's kind of slow and kind of dumb. But then as soon as Dale Cooper appeared, I was like, this is the greatest show ever made. Oh my God, this is such a great character. And everything else after that, his enthusiasm for where he was and what you're watching carried you through into the show. And his quirkiness and stuff like that gave you this. He was quirky, but he was also into that world.
Yeah.
And so.
Quick tip to writers, make one of your characters sincere. There you go.
You're right. And when you
he
watch,
where does he want? It's like one of your characters.
And when you watch Fire Walk with Me, what's interesting, and there's a scene at the beginning of the movie where Dale comes in and talks to Gordon, the FBI agent played by David Lynch, and he's very low key. He's very down. It's a very down scene. And that movie is a little bit of a down movie, but that scene is down. And you're like, yes, because he's not at Twin Peaks yet. He's in this bad place and he's kind of lost. And he finds himself is when he drives into Twin Peaks and you can hear his excitement. And he's talking to Diane on his little recorder and he's asking her to look up what kind of trees he's seeing, and he's so excited. He just wants to experience this place in all kinds of different ways. And that's great. And yeah, you're right. Be sincere and it's a really great thing. And so his character kind of carries you through that kind of okay second season. Like the stuff that he's doing is great. And that second season is bookended by one of the greatest opening episodes of all time. The first episode of the season two is fantastic. And
I don't remember it, but okay, go ahead.
Okay, well, I'm going to assume people have seen it because...
Second episode of season two.
First episode of season two.
First episode of season two.
Because remember, this last episode, Dale is shot...
25 years ago.
Dale is shot in the door.
Right.
That's when the season ended.
Right.
Dale Cooper's been shot. The first episode opens with him laying on the floor. It's about 20-minute long sequence of him laying on the floor of his hotel room. An old man comes in. The old man, bellhop, comes in. Brings him some milk, shuffles in, smiles at him and nods, even though he's laying on the floor in obvious distress. Shuffles in, brings him his milk, and he also has that vision of the giant when he's laying there. So there's all this weird kind of stuff happening here, and just like, this is great! Oh my gosh, this is great! Oh, it's so... This is what you do! This is the great... it's so good. And then, obviously, the final episode of that season was also great. And those were both David Lynch-directed things. And according to a magazine that I used to like to read called Wrapped in Plastic, which was like a fanzine for Twin Peaks.
Back when fanzines existed.
Back when fanzines
existed. That's what we used to call web pages back then. Fanzines.
Yeah. And the final episode of Twin Peaks, Mark Frost basically wrote with his writers. They wrote the final episode. David Lynch wanted to direct the final episode, so he came back to direct it, looked at what was happening on the show, and said, no. And so he just went through the script and crossed out huge scenes, a huge amount of stuff, all this thing, rewrote it, added the Black Lodge ending. This is what I've read. I've also read that Mark Frost already had the Black Lodge ending in it. So it depends who you want to listen to. They had a falling out over all this stuff. So, but according to legend, David Lynch came in, rewrote huge amounts of the script and filmed basically his own version of Twin Peaks as the final sequence, set up about three different cliffhangers, all ending in huge disaster.
Yeah.
And just left you like, what just happened, you know? And then when you heard there was going to be a movie, you're like, oh, well, they're going to solve it. They're going to tell us what happened. It's a prequel. This is a ripoff. Yeah, the prequel's really great. So, you know.
It was a really good meal, but it's like we're gonna go out for ice cream. Oh, what do you got? Steak. Oh, it's good steak. We got the ice cream, a little bit of ice cream. Oh, I always said you got all you can eat ice cream. That's all right.
But even this is a little bit like that too. If you think this continuation of Twin Peaks is going to give you an easy solution, I don't think we're going to
find it.
It'll give you some. It's going to give you.
You don't need solutions.
You're going to enjoy it. But I don't know if you watched Inland Empire. That movie did not give you a lot of clues about what it was telling you. That's a very difficult, surreal film.
I did not see that film, no.
It's a good movie, of course, because David Lynch, but it's difficult. It's a puzzler.
So, to sum up my thing, this is what Watchmen was like. There you go. So you're going to have to say anything through that. We'll see how it is. And then later, someone's going to watch all this, and they're going to binge it, and they're going to have a very different experience than you had watching it, and but, go like, oh, yeah, no, this is very different.
That's true. But I wanted Eve and Mary to watch Twin Peaks, and Mary, at that time, she wasn't all that interested in seeing it. I'm not too sure why. Maybe it just didn't appeal to her. And Eve and I watched it together, and she really, really liked it. She liked it a lot. I mean, she agrees with, she basically had the same opinion that I did about the second season dip. But we kind of binge-watched it. So her experience was different than mine.
Yeah.
But she still loves that show. And, she was the one that wrote May 21st on the calendar 6 months ago or whenever, whenever we got our new calendar. And so we knew
when Twin Peaks. We got to figure out how to watch this.
When Twin Peaks.
We got Crave.
Good. And turned out she had to work till 10 that night. So, but we still watched it when she came and watched 2 hours worth. And then after we finished watching it, I was looking at something and I realized, there's another 2 hours available. So I was trying to tape it as a series, and I stumbled on the fact that there's another two episodes. And I was like, oh, and Eve had already gone to bed. So I wrote to her and said, there's another two episodes. Get out here. Mm-hmm. She just came on and said, I can't watch anymore, Dad. But the next night when she came home from work at 11, we watched the other two episodes.
And just went, num, 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 num.
And just went, oh, More, please.
Yeah, it was very difficult at the end of those four episodes to just go, ah, so are they releasing four a week? No, just one a week. No!
But that's how it was like, in the old days, so let's not be big babies.
It's fine.
Spoiled
brats. Having to watch shows once a week like a common person from the 80s? What's wrong with
it? I don't know, but I...
No, it'll be
but
fine.
I agree with you.
It's a good experience.
It's a different experience, a different view experience. And that was the same with Legion. We watched Legion like that, and I don't think it took away
but
from...
But here's what Legion... here's the thing about Legion, though. I don't think you expected Legion to be great.
No, but I just mean it was also a weekly
thing.
True. We didn't get it as a binge.
At what point did you realize Legion was great?
First episode.
Like, how far into the first episode?
Where is the scene?
It starts very Wes Anderson-y.
It's a scene when he's laying in his room in the hospital. And it goes beside the bed or whatever, and it goes into a tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I realized, oh, this is great.
Yeah, I'm not sure when I did, but it was like
I turned to Eve and I just said, "This show is really great."
Because by the time I got to the end of the first episode of Legion, I went, "Oh, did they Joss Whedon me? Like, is this one where like there's a great director for the first one, and then we're gonna build up steam as things go later on?
Yeah.
But it's not gonna be that like da da, you know, start and it's like, nope, they all got it, you know." And it's like, well, then about three episodes in, I'm like, "Well, these are great setups. Is there gonna be any payoff for any of this?"
Yeah,
and it's fine if there's not. Wait, no, there is. There's payoff.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great.
Didn't Diane Keaton direct a couple of episodes of Twin Peaks, the original?
Yes.
Okay.
That is true.
Yeah. Which is interesting.
I think she may have directed the episode that you brought up with the fate of one of the characters being very odd.
Oh, that's okay.
What you said just
neat,
then.
Neat, yeah.
I believe that was one of hers.
Huh, cool. Yeah, that's Twin Peaks. It was a revolutionary show, and I think it changed television. It took a while for us to get to that point, but I think a lot of TV that we watch now is more based in Twin Peaks than it's based in anything else that existed.
Well, something
at that,
Twin Peaks, and especially with this, it slowed things down.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like TV was speeding up faster, keep everyone's attention. It's like, you know what? If you just slow down for a second,
yes,
and just stay on something, mm-hmm, we're gonna pay attention.
Yeah, there's some, and while you're watching the new Twin Peaks, we were watching. There's a scene near the beginning. It takes place in the woods, and my thought when I thought that was, I just said, I bet you David Lynch is the sound designer on this.
The sound is amazing.
The sound is amazing in that show. And then
the white noise is crazy good.
But even his use of ambient sounds to like turn it up to drown people's voices sometimes.
Yeah, that's what I mean by white noise, the stuff in the background.
Yeah. It's just, I thought when you meant white noise, you're just talking about like there's a scene where a person's just sitting watching actual white noise.
Nope. I mean, there's always something in the background that puts you off, off edge.
Yeah.
And something someone said about David Lynch, which he uses very well in the new series, is if you show nothing for a while, your brain can't process that. It's a vacuum,
mm-hmm,
and your brain will put something in there.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just assuming, like, if you show a hallway, and you're going
and you
slowly down a hallway,
and you slowly dolly down a hallway,
because you're now thinking what's coming down the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna imagine so much horrible shit,
mm-hmm,
and then whatever comes out
now
rides the slipstream on whatever you did, and it's gonna scare the shit out of you, no matter what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there is that scene in Mulholland Drive where the guy's talking about a nightmare he had where there's something behind the store, right?
And he's also in Twin Peaks.
Yeah, there you go. And so
new Twin Peaks.
There you are. And so you're that character is
no that actor.
Okay.
Has a small role as the guy in Las Vegas.
Oh, I thought that character was actually in it, but we can talk about that another time, without spoilers. But when he's describing it, and you're like, it's a slow walk to get to where it is,
mm-hmm,
and so you're playing it all in your head.
Yeah,
all in your head.
Yeah.
What's it going to be? Is it going to be this? No, it's going to be that. Nah, it'll be nothing. But it might be something.
Yeah.
But it could be geez, vacuum, mm-hmm, vacuum, fill. Then whatever it is.
All this. I just got goosebumps when that happened. All the skin in my or all the hair in my body went.
Yeah, it's
very good scene.
You know, a filmmaker that's not that confident will show you everything.
Yeah.
A filmmaker that is confident will show you some of it. A filmmaker that's really confident and is a master will show you nothing, but will still get you to go there yourself.
Yeah.
So you walk to the edge of that cliff and you look down and did nothing. I didn't do nothing, buddy. Check it out. What's that? Push.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's he's very good at just leaving the camera there. And you fill in the details.
I was saying to my wife Pia the other day that if you did not know that The Straight Story was a G-rated movie,
mm-hmm,
that wasn't a horror movie, and you told someone it was a horror movie and said, "This is the most horrifying movie,
mm-hmm,
ever."
Yeah.
And I'm just going to warn you about that before you see it. I don't want to say anything, but you're going to have the shit scared out of you. Just going to let you know that.
Yeah.
And then you watch the movie, you'd be terrified.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be terrified the whole thing, because the whole thing would be suspense of him going across the country. It's like, what is it? Is it now?
Yeah.
Because it's the same Lynch thing.
Yeah.
It's just a monster doesn't attack at the end.
But he has the same filming style. I've never seen The Straight Story, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, now, you should. Because if you like it, because it's actually one of David Lynch's best movies. It is. It's just a real sincere, good story, told well, and G-rated, which is amazing.
Yeah. Interesting.
Okay, and I've just blown David's mind, and so a vehicle is coming to take care of David. Can you guess what type of vehicle that is? Did you guess?
Same old.
Brain ambulance, if you did. give yourself a cookie.
That's what I got.
Yeah.
Take a drink, please.
Well, seriously, if you get a chance to see The Straight Story,
I should watch it. I don't know.
You just hate lawnmowers so damn much?
I do not want to watch a guy ride a lawnmower. That's all. You know what film? I don't think it's a...
There's also the sequel.
It's a David
Lynch
film.
Which is Straight Story 2, Mo Money, Mo Problems, which you might want to...
I should watch that one as well.
Yeah.
What's the part three?
Lawn of the Dead.
Lawn of the Dead is the... thank you. You know what? I really like Wild at Heart. I didn't like it the first time I watched it. I had to watch it a second time.
I watched it with someone who was a real yapper.
Well, that doesn't help, does it?
Nope.
You're not going to enjoy a film then. Was it me? Or are you looking at me? You're looking at me.
Nope.
You're still looking at me.
It was a first date with somebody, and I learned that they talk loudly during movies.
I don't like that.
It was like, oh, I like you, but this is going to make it rough. And it did. It did indeed. Saw it at the Paradise Theater.
The scene I love so much in that Crispin Glover as the guy who loves Christmas so much. It's the most disturbing part of the film, right? And it's just thrown in there.
Oh, God.
But you know what's funny? There's a movie. I don't think it's a great film, but it's a pretty good movie. And I think it's called House of the Devil or something like that. I talked about it a little while ago. But there's an opening sequence of the film where it's just this woman is looking to rent an apartment.
Okay.
And the camera.
And her landlord is the devil.
The camera starts like somewhere in another room, and it dollies through the kitchen. And she's standing in this other room on the other side of the kitchen. And it just keeps dollying along. And she's has her back to you. The whole time. And it's this music playing and the camera just slowly moving towards her. And that is the scariest part of the movie because you can't see her face. And for me, I don't know why, but I always find that more frightening than what they show me is the idea of I can't see someone's face. That's so scary to me. Mm-hmm. Once you show me what I'm supposed to be scared of, I'm never scared anymore.
Here's what scares me the most in a movie. And it's if I do a movie, I'll put this in there. Is a character that just stops at one point and looks directly at the camera.
That scares you?
It scares the shit out of me. What if a fictional character acknowledges that you're there and watching?
Really?
That notices scares you. Really?
How come that scares you though? Like, what is it about it that scares you? I find it unsettling? Like,
because there's the being the passive observer and then being observed by this character.
Yeah.
And like, no, you're part of this.
Yeah.
You think you're not part of this, but you're part of this. There's a scene in Twin Peaks where Bob is walking in the distance in a house, and then just like turns and looks, and then just crawls towards you.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like that is legitimately creepy.
That is scary. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The end of you have to see and the end of Inland Empire then.
Okay.
So you'll also find that creepy.
I don't like creepy things, so...
No, you should see it.
Oh, I don't like
it. You really should.
No,
you should
don't watch, like scary things.
You should see the movie.
Really no, that's the problem. It's like when a scary thing is in my head, it's in my head for the rest of my life. So I'm like, do I want that thing taking up rental space in my head for the rest of my life? Is that worth it for me? Probably not. I'm all right. I'm good. I'll leave space there for something else.
It's David Lynch, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. On this subject.
There's an interesting
YouTube channel called Renegade Cut.
Okay.
And right now, this fellow who does this YouTube channel is going through and sort of parsing David Lynch films for us. So he's going through and just talking about the different thinking behind them, and it's interesting. Good. So he's done Eraserhead, Elephant Man, Dune. I have not watched the Blue Velvet one, so I assume he's done it because I watched the Wild at Heart one. And so I assume he's going to do them all. It's sort of, I guess, it's David Lynch month for him because Twin Peaks is coming up again.
And
so.
He's just going to do the movies.
I guess he's not
going to do that sitcom.
Why not? That's a good Radio Days.
That's what I'm asking.
Is it called Radio Days?
No, that was a Woody Allen movie.
On the Air?
That sounds about right.
On the Air. That was good. Our my close personal friend, David M., mm-hmm. former friend of the show, has that on Laserdisc. That complete series.
Wow. What? How many episodes were there?
There was quite a few that weren't run. So, yeah, it's pretty good. It's a really good show. Like, when you watch it, like, there's good actors and stuff.
That's one of those things
show.
That I'm surprised doesn't make it to Netflix, because they've got it, right? Mm. So just put it on.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Not enough people are looking for it online.
What's it going to cost you? What's it matter?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Not enough
people looking for it. I don't know. Maybe it's bandwidth. I don't know. But like, put it on.
Why not?
I mean, I'm looking at some of the stuff on there. It's got to be more people will watch it than the other things.
Yeah.
Come on.
You'd think so.
Smarten up.
But apparently people like all that stuff. They had Hell or High Water on there. On Netflix, and I was like, oh, I gotta watch that. And then I went to look for it the other day to watch it, and it was gone. I was like, you can't just have stuff on for a month or less. That's ridiculous. Maybe it was more than a month. I don't know.
Well, you should have seen Hell or High Water. It was really good.
Yeah, I heard that.
That's a shame.
I can't
you
watch
really
it.
Really missed out.
Now I have to do on demand or something.
Now you're gonna have to wait like a couple of seconds until it shows up on one of your many movie channels.
Well, the movie channels that I have, they only show new movies, they don't show repeat, like old movies, unless it shows up on TCM or something. I don't know. I think I'm SOL, like that old ABBA song.
Sailor on Leave.
Oh.
You're very horny, and you're in the city, and you're looking for a good time.
That's right.
New York, New York, it's a hell of a town.
And the Bronx
gonna
is up
sleep
and
with
the
that lady
down.
From Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah.
Clearly, that's what happens there. They deliver on that setup.
The lady from Laverne and Shirley?
Yep.
She was on Laverne and Shirley?
Yeah, she was the landlady.
Really?
I think Mrs. Babish was her name, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And she's there, and she nails Frank Sinatra. She does the full Pharaoh.
Good for her.
Yeah, good on her.
I don't think...
Hey, I want you to come up to my room. And it's like, I don't know. Yeah, you should. I don't know. And then you show up at the room, and then the roommate's there. Ah, it's not going to happen. Wait, she gets rid of the roommate.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and the next time you see them, they've clearly had sex.
Oh, they're both happy?
For quite a while. She's not going, come on back. Mm. She's like, yeah. Mission accomplished there.
I like when adults can be
adults.
She
had it her way.
I like when adults can be adults, which is so rare in media of that time period.
Well, you're not going to send the sailors back without getting a little action.
Oh, I hope not. But I mean,
the other guy's going to get crushed by Legzann Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow.
But there's
if
other,
she just
there's
like
that
twitched,
other one,
she'd snap him in half.
There's that other one, Anchors Away, and that's basically no one gets nothing.
I tried watching that, and I couldn't get through it. And, you know, after watching On the Town, it was like, oh, I'd love to watch Anchors Away now. Yeah, I'm good. Life goes on. It's fine.
I like Catherine Grayson's lipstick. That's all I like. It's the height of the movie for me for some reason. And yeah, she's good looking. But she's one of those people. It's a weird thing at that time period. Like you get your sort of natural singers like a Gene Kelly or Fred Astaire. They're not really singers, but they can do okay. You know, Gene Kelly has a bit of a husky voice, but he can sing a song.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get someone like Catherine Grayson with her operatic, you know, singing, la la. You know, you're just like, oh, this doesn't work in this movie. Like, it feels so different, like no. out of the film. It's not part of.
I do like a Fred Astaire song. I like the guy. It's wispy,
yeah.
but it's airy, but it's good.
It's
light and satifying.
Yeah, they can do it.
He's just relaxing and he feels so good. No,
yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah,
all right, I'm all with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like Bing Crosby without the bass. Coming in every so often. Just, he's got that smoothness. And
yeah.
It's all fine. Mm-hmm. I think that's because they drank so much scotch back then. Just smoothed out your voice in a way that your modern singers
that's
today
right.
do not
that was
have
the, That was the way to success in those days, was drinking a lot of scotch.
Smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
I don't think we have the smooth.
Drinking is always the best way to reach success. I think we've all discovered that.
Well,
yep, it's a fact.
Look at those singers you like. What do they got sitting on the stool? What is it? A bottle of soda pop? Nope. Thing of scotch. One ice cube. Sinatra style.
It is not.
Yeah, that was what Sinatra would always have.
Well,
he'd have one big
ice
cube and a scotch, and then people who went, I want to be like Sinatra, what would they have? They'd have the scotch with the ice cube, one big ice cube.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bunch of small ice cubes.
Those
get out of here. That's going
to
melt.
You seem to be implying that like Sinatra is like my favorite sort of style of singing, which is not the case at all.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that he was the world's favorite style of singing for the time that he was, top of the charts.
Sure.
But then Mickey Rooney was the world's favorite type of acting. So what are you going to do?
Different time.
Different strokes. Style.
Different style.
Yeah. What was I going to say with that? Oh, I was going to say, when we're talking about like how people watch movies, I feel, you know, something like...
Badly.
Well, the problem is when you like the classic movies like a Psycho, you can't watch that movie the way a person would have watched it back in the day. If you went in not knowing what was going to go on, that's a very different movie than if you've seen all the scenes and grown
that's
up with all the hits.
That's why I showed
and now you watch it all
that's right.
put together.
That's why I showed it to my daughters when they were young. Because you got to see this before you get all the cultural osmosis is going to tell
and
you
when
all
they,
the,
and when they were done,
it.
You went kiss your mother goodnight, and Lisa was there in the chair, and you rotated her around and she placed her with a skeleton.
Whoop,
they all
whoop,
had a good turn back around. Whoop. Then you were wearing one of Lisa's wigs, and
doo,
on your head.
doo, doo.
Yeah.
I think,
and then you say to them, "Don't worry, I wouldn't hurt a fly." Well, good night.
Good night, everyone. Yeah, I think, well, I think that's a really great film, and I think that's a good film to show your 9 and 6 year old.
And of course, here comes Child Protective Services after hearing that.
No.
Yep. A little late, folks.
A little too late.
A little too late.
I have created my own little monsters.
And what was that?
That was. Would you want to guess? Did you see it?
I did not see it.
Okay, guess.
Hazmat.
Nope.
What?
Welcome, Matt. It was a paramedic.
It was Traveling Matt from the Fraggle Rock Show.
I don't even know what that is.
He was the framing device.
Oh, okay.
It would be, first of all, Traveling Matt is an animation term.
Okay.
But they would have the main character, I forget what his name was, Gozer the Gozerian. No, that wasn't his name. Would be reading a letter from his Traveling
Matt. Was it Doozer?
Matt. Sure. No, Doozers were the workers.
Oh, okay.
And so he'd be reading a letter from his Traveling Matt.
Yeah.
And Uncle Traveling Matt. And so Traveling Matt would be in the real world going, these silly people, they do all this kind of stuff. Okay. And they'd be getting it wrong and writing a letter. And there you are.
Did that show not replace the Beachcombers?
In our hearts?
On Sunday nights?
I can't
believe... I seem to remember it took something off that I liked, and that's why I did not like that show.
Well,
same feeling about He-Man.
Okay. I think the Beachcombers lasted until everyone was wearing... And listen...
Oh, that's right. Beachcombers are long time. Like, so it must have been Walt Disney or something. It took something off the air.
Yeah, because like the Beachcombers started wearing terrible clothes, like really bad 80s clothes, because they tried to all be hip.
Yeah.
And it was like, don't be hip, Beachcombers.
No.
We don't need you to be hip.
Don't need
to, Wrong. And then they made the title funky, and they called it the new Beachcombers.
Okay.
Like, stop it. Stop being so try hard.
Yeah.
And so those last episodes are unwatchable.
Echo Beachcombers far away in time. Echo Beachcombers far away in time.
Me on the Beachcombers. Me on the Beachcombers. Anything else? Any other Beach Boys songs? Go ahead. And the Beach Goes Combers. And the Beach Goes Combers.
Reach for the Beach.
Yeah?
Reach for the Beachcombers.
Oh,
the
are we just
album.
Going titles?
Yeah. Right. That's all I can think of. Sorry. I don't know the songs from
Okay.
Sorry.
Beachcombers Blanket Bingo.
No. Beachcombers Blanket Bingo. All right, good.
And we're good.
Nice. On the Beachcombers, the Neil Young album.
I don't think it replaced... You know what it probably replaced? I'm gonna throw this guess out here. Bugs Bunny.
No.
Okay.
It was on CBC.
What was Bugs Bunny on?
Bugs Bunny was on KVOS.
No. You're thinking about like Frisky Frolics type thing?
Yeah.
I'm talking about there used to be the Bugs Bunny, the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner hour was on
it
at 5
on,
o'clock
wasn't
on
CBC.
Sundays.
It wasn't on CBC.
It was on
Saturdays.
Saturday.
Yeah, I would watch the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner hour before our hockey started. Canada started at 5.
When was... Okay, everyone, we're going to be...
So it was on at 4 o'clock.
We're all just doing memory things right now. Mm-hmm. When was Carol Burnett? Was that on a Sunday?
It was on a Wednesday night, I believe, wasn't it?
Wednesday? Oh, boy. Now I am not...
Wasn't it a weekday? Was it a weekday? I don't think it was on a Sunday. Maybe I'm wrong.
Okay, here's what I'm going to say.
Maybe it was
right
on
now.
Later in the evening.
If you would like to be our research assistant for free, we need you to sit in a chair and just go on Wikipedia and just fact check us
fact
as we go
through
it.
Fact check all this stuff that we're saying.
Because the amount of time we waste doing this bullshit is amazing.
Is it waste? Is it wasted?
I don't know. I did have a topic. Unless you've got a topic.
Oh no, you if you have a topic.
I've got a topic.
Okay.
And here's I
thought
know.
Twin Peaks was your topic. Your twopic.
Twin Peaks was something I can't really talk about because we don't want to spoil things.
That's true.
So
that's
true. It's when we're dancing around like we're a giant. We're like dancing around an owl.
Sure.
You know.
They're what they seem.
I remember there was a Simpsons joke, I believe, where he's watching Twin Peaks and it's like, the horse stands for symbolism. It's like, yeah, that's exactly right.
Good stuff.
I was reading an article about Jimmy Fallon, not Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah.
Jimmy Fallon.
I feel.
How's your feelings? First of all, I have just said about me reading articles. I know you don't like me reading.
I try to make you avoid doing that.
Yeah.
I don't want you to have any accurate information that would ruin the show.
That's right. Please just talk about shows from the 80s and old
that
movies.
We don't remember what time they're
Nothing
on.
Nothing beyond Anchors Away, if you could.
Anchors Away. Right. Let's go, friends.
We're shoving right off.
I was just
going to
say that my feeling of both of them, I am kind of
what both
ambivalent.
Of them? Who's both
Fallon
of them?
And Kimmel.
Okay, I'm just talking about.
But anyway, going about Fallon.
All right.
I'm just letting you know how my feeling is before
right.
we start.
I feel similarly. I can't watch. But we're going to talk just about Fallon right now.
Okay.
I just had a little bit of a theory because I was reading a thing about how his ratings have gone down.
Who has?
Fallon's ratings.
Well, he shouldn't have had Trump on. That was a terrible idea.
Now, this is what I want to discuss with you.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay.
And this leads into a little bit of a bigger subject. So, everyone, settle on in.
Settle on
in. You sitting comfortably?
Or we could dash it off in a minute.
Okay.
You never know.
My theory is... No. My rough theory about Jimmy Fallon...
Okay, we'll talk a little bit about... What's this article saying? His ratings have gone down.
Have gone down basically since Colbert's have gone up because he's been addressing the Trump situation.
Politics.
Whereas Fallon, when he did the hair rub and was...
He tousled
his hair.
Tousled Donald Trump's hair.
And his ratings have kind of gone down. And there's some things he does. People like his lip sync stuff and goofy stuff, and it's fine. Mm-hmm. But his interviews aren't,
not very good.
Great. But yeah, I was just talking about how... He finds this very upsetting because he doesn't want to hurt anyone's feelings and he just wants to have a good time. And he's that kind of guy. He just wants to be a guy who has a good time.
You know, so he wants to be Nero.
Relax before you go to sleep.
He wants to be Nero fiddling while Rome burns.
Why
would anyone hate Nero?
My thing is, I think Nero had an opinion, whereas I don't think Fallon does. Now, here's my theory on the Fallon situation. When Kevin, what's the name of the guy?
Kevin Bacon.
No, not at all. From he does the Christopher Walken impression. Kevin Pollak.
Okay.
Kevin Pollak, who's in Usual Suspects.
Okay, that is Kevin Pollak.
All right.
Unless you're thinking of Kevin Spacey.
There's more than one Kevin and more than one impressionist, which actually leads into what I was about to say. Kevin Pollak, when he talks about doing his impression of Christopher Walken.
Sure.
People love that. And it really lifts everyone up. And what he talks about, and I think he's very honest about this, is that when you do an impression of like Columbo or what have you, you tap into people's love of that character. Mm-hmm. And you borrow from love of that character and you absorb some of that character. And you know, he feels sometimes
Into why everyone loved Rich Little's Nixon.
They love how he does it. Because, you know, people did love Nixon enough to vote for him. So they tap into this love. And they absorb it a little bit, and they take it into themselves.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Okay.
That's what our show does all the time.
When we just mentioned a thing, Star Wars. I love Star Wars. Now I like these guys. But I think when you're an impressionist, you can really ride that.
Yeah.
You can sing a song as a character, and people who like Sinatra will love that you're singing Smoke on the Water as Sinatra. Mm-hmm. And you'll get that. Mm-hmm. And you absorb the love. But I think there's a price to be paid with that. Now, my theory on Jimmy Fallon is that he is an impressionist, period. Like, he started off as an impressionist.
He's not a funny person.
He's not a funny person. But as an impressionist, you watch a character and go, like, what are the beats to exaggerate? Mm. What do they do? What things do they hit? He's a musical impressionist as well, so he knows, like... Okay.
That's actually really... Like, sorry to interrupt you, but that's actually really interesting. That's something I like about him. Is he was on... I guess he was on WTF, and I was listening to him on there, and he was talking about the difference between doing a harmonica solo as Neil Young and doing a harmonica solo as Bob Dylan. He was talking about how it's different and what's different about it. And I thought, that's really kind of interesting. Like, that's really musically interesting.
He is a mimic. Mm-hmm. He is a very good mimic. So when he was on Saturday Night Live, he was very good as a mimic. And he would do these characters, and they would all be mimicry of such. And when he did the news, you know, he saw how the news was done and did that.
Yeah.
But you never really felt he brought his own thing to it.
No.
You never got what his opinion was. Mm-hmm. And then when it was The Tonight Show, and he took over The Tonight Show, I think he just
mimicked
a talk show host.
Okay.
So he's doing a mimicry of a talk show host.
Yeah, yeah.
And the things that you like best or people like best about him, when he's doing lip sync, well, he's doing mimicry.
Yeah.
Now he's doing a cover of a song. He's doing mimicry. Now he's doing Neil Young. He's doing mimicry.
Yeah.
And you get, if you love Neil Young, now you're projecting the love of Neil Young into Jimmy Fallon or whatever. Now, the problem is, when he had Trump on, he was bonding with Trump and doing a little Trump. And because he's such, and I say this not in a negative way, because we need these in nature, parasite, he absorbs what's around him and takes that on as a strength.
Yeah.
Now, when Trump was on, he absorbed a bit of Trump. People connected him with Trump.
Yeah.
And so now he's connected with Trump forever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so when people see Jimmy, they see Trump, but Trump is a negative, dark little sickness force.
Yeah.
And so you can't shake it off
because
you absorbed it into yourself and now it's part of your fucking DNA.
Yeah.
And you're part of his story of how he rose to success. So you can't do it. And that's the problem with being, say you're a comedian who is famous for doing your Bill Cosby impression.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden Bill Cosby's a pedophile. And now, oh, fuck, there's a small bit of people that when they see you, they go, yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
That guy. Yeah. Yeah. You take on the sins of who you...
Why would you say Cosby's a pedophile? Is he a pedophile?
No, not pedophile. Sorry, he's a sex offender.
Okay.
There were some underage women, though, that were involved in that, too. Sorry about that. Sorry, I got my horrible person thing. He's a rapist. Let's just go rapist.
Yeah, well, a rapist is fine.
Is fine. I mean, that's the Dave Dedrick take. Yeah.
No. I just meant your description of him as a rapist
is fine.
I just felt like I didn't realize when you said pedophile, that's a whole different thing that's also terrible, but is different in a terrible way. And that was why I was just like, I didn't hear this about him. But you were just being inaccurate.
And
and
that's something I found.
I wasn't like trying to approve either one. Like, no, one is worse than the other. You know, I was just saying.
They're both pretty damn bad. But yeah, I've seen that with people that do impressions. And, you know, it's that boring of the love. And if that becomes too much and they don't get their own stuff out there, then they're kind of hollow. Yeah. And, it's the difference between Kevin Pollak and Kevin Spacey, now that you mention it, because Kevin Spacey does great impressions.
Yeah.
But you've also seen Kevin Spacey has so many iconic characters that it doesn't matter how many impressions he does.
Yeah.
He doesn't get the stink on him of those characters. Mm-hmm. Same with Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
He does Trump. You'd think, well, now he's fucked forever. Wrong. Because you know him from all these iconic characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's okay. You're safe.
That's right.
Jimmy Fallon, I don't know you from nothing else but this.
Yeah.
A little bit of Trump on you. Woo! Always. Can't get that off you.
Yeah.
That stank is going to be on there for everybody.
But part of what you said is true, and I think this is more to the point, is that
all of what I said someone, is true.
Someone like Stephen Colbert comes to it with his heart on his sleeve. His feelings are visible. How he feels about what Trump is and what America is becoming is obviously, you know, it's there in front of you. Whereas Jimmy Fallon is a bit of a hollow person. And so you're not getting any heart to what he's doing. There's no feeling to what he does. It's all an adept performance.
He's the guy at the party who's laughing at the racist joke as well as the other jokes. Mm-hmm. And I just want everyone to have a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, okay.
You know, he's a phony. And that's my
Well, maybe part not of even my a phony. Objection. I think he's sincere.
No, he is a phony.
He wants everyone to have a good time.
Yeah.
He's empty, not a phony.
But he's a phony.
Yeah. Well, are you phony if you're hollow? That's not a phony. He's like, he's never presented himself as, I've got a strong opinion on this, and here's something that I'm counter
to. He's a phony.
To.
He's a phony because the show pretends that what's happening is happening before you, unrehearsed and real. That show has no reality to it ever. It's always
But that's
rehearsed.
Every talk show, for the most
is
part.
Is every talk show fake, though?
Not every. There's some that aren't, but for the most part, you know, it's the host, it's Carson saying, you know, ah, boy, so you've been on a vacation or anything lately?
Okay,
it's like, yeah, you've loaded up the story.
Yes, there is that element. But that's not phony.
Tell me what lie do you think he's putting forward? Because that's what
okay. Well, they do a
is.
Thing. They'll do a thing on Jimmy Fallon where they'll set it up where when he'll do an impersonation of a famous singer, and his guest will do an impersonation of a singer, and it's going to be randomly selected, but it's presented as if they are both unrehearsed
and clearly
doing,
bullshit because it's all
yes. And to me, that's being phony. You know, you're presenting this as if it's unrehearsed and that you are both so amazing that you can just do it right now and present it to us without any rehearsal.
Yeah. And you've got a funny lyric as well.
And to me, that's being fake because you are presenting what you're doing as better than what it actually is.
Right.
Because you're presenting yourself as being so great and your guest as so fantastic that both of you can just do impersonations of Cher and Frank Sinatra or Neil Young. Just on the drop of a hat, I can come up with a song. The band can play with us. We're all fantastic together. And I just feel like, no, you're not. And it's not real. You've
That does strike me
this.
a little bad too when I
it's
saw
phony
it.
It's funny because
I know it's bullshit. Yeah,
yeah
it's bullshit.
And
it's magic. It's a magic setup.
But it's bad for the audience too because the audience is like, I really enjoyed this, but I could never do what he's doing. And you're like, yeah, you could because you just would have to rehearse it as much as he's doing it. You might not do it as super well as him because he is a professional entertainer who has done this for many years and has developed an ability to to impersonate people that you're maybe not at yet. But you could. If you wanted to reach a sort of level with your own impersonations, if you wanted to. But because it's presented as something that's unrehearsed and impromptu, you will feel like you're not adequate.
And here's the other trick, too, is like with that one, where it's like it's always singers. And you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe the singer can do this impression of these other singers. It's like, of course they can. That's how you start being a singer, is you impersonate other singers.
Yeah.
And then you get your own style together.
Same way when you're a comic. You impersonate other comics.
That's right.
And then one day you are.
You ape, and then you learn, and you go. Mm-hmm. Even like the lip sync stuff. I mean, where the other person's going, I'm going to do this song. And he's like, what?
Yeah.
It's like, fuck off.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no way you weren't told ahead of time. You're going to do this.
They've already rehearsed it 100 times before you see the show, by the way.
Well, that's the other bit is like that it would have to be something that would perfectly contrast you. You can't go random.
Yeah.
This is TV.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, fuck off. Of course you know what it is. Yeah, the fakery.
I don't like that. It's phony to me. So
okay.
I don't like because I keep
But in his interviews, do you feel like his interview style, like he's a phony? He presents himself one way, but he's actually really another way?
He acts like he's interested in people when he's just a hollow shell that has no interest in anyone. You know, like that's why there's no back and forth with him because people are talking to him.
So he pretends he's interested because he's interested about everybody. That's not sincere because
You're interested in no one. You can't be interested in everybody, so you're interested in no one. It's a paradox.
That's interesting.
It's a paradox of
I've never thought of him as a phony. I've just thought of him as a shell.
Yeah, you know? I just don't like him because he's phony. I don't like Jimmy Kimmel because he's mean, and I don't like Jimmy Fallon because he's a phony.
Yeah,
it's not that I don't like him. I should say I'm ambivalent to them because one's a phony, and I'm ambivalent to the other one because he's mean. Mm-hmm. And what I'm talking about
is... But Carson was mean back in the day. Did you care for Carson when he was doing his thing?
But here's the difference. Carson was mean in that he was willing to trade meanness with you. If you went back at Carson with a little jab, he would give you an appreciative laugh. He wouldn't...
Letterman back in the day?
Letterman would turn it on you because Letterman is a stand-up comic, which Carson wasn't.
And he had a different style, too.
Different style. But
Letterman... You had to win in the 80s. Everyone had to win.
That's true. But Letterman, it felt real. Like, Letterman, when you came into Letterman, it felt
dangerous.
It felt dangerous. It felt like if you came on with a crazy haircut, he was going to point out that your haircut was crazy. And it might make you cry. But he was going to point out to you that your haircut was crazy, and that was what you—that was a chance you took.
You're right. It was the danger. It was also like the Howard Stern type thing. It was that kind of thing. Yeah. And I don't think very many people have ever, with the exceptions of the semi-scandal, said Letterman was a phony. Like Letterman always kind of came across as Letterman Letterman did.
Yeah.
I don't know about Carson. Who knows?
But I mean, Johnny Carson was interested in you as a guest and would facilitate you looking really good. Jimmy Fallon cannot do that. And I feel the same way about Conan O'Brien. Maybe he's better now, but when he first started, mm-hmm. he wasn't that interested in you as a guest. He was interested in finding ways to make jokes about what you were saying.
And he was always comedy first.
Yeah. And
not story first.
That's right. And so as the guest would suffer because they could never look as good as he did because he didn't facilitate their looking good.
Yeah, if you're
could do it. Letterman could bring a Tom Hanks on and have Tom Hanks tell a fantastic story about being a bellhop or being a valet for Nipsey Russell. And it was a great story. And Letterman in no way detracted from how great that story was. He knew how to give you as a guest space to tell...
it's serving the show.
Tell your killer story.
And speaking of Tom Hanks...
But Conan would interrupt you.
Yeah.
Just like I interrupted you. Conan would interrupt you to mention his hair and shake his head up and down or do something
like that. Which is why when Tom Hanks goes on various shows, he knows the type of story to bring.
Mm-hmm.
He can bring a longer story on to Colbert.
Yeah.
Or a personal story or have something with a little heart to it. Yeah. But he knows when he's going to Conan.
Yeah.
Joke.
Sure.
Leave the beats, have a setup, let Conan pay that setup off. That was the other thing you did with Carson.
Yeah.
Was you would do a little open thing that let Carson get a zinger in.
Yeah.
And if you did that, then he'd really love you because you set him up, set up the master. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
And depending on the show you're on, you tell a different story and you do a different thing.
Yeah.
The actors that come on and just go, I'm just gonna tell the story about the set. Oh, they fry. On a Conan,
but
especially.
But that's unfair to that actor, isn't it? Because as a host, that is your name. You're the host of the show.
Right.
You are supposed to allow your guests the opportunity to shine.
But here's the problem with that. Okay, so you're...
Are you defending Conan or are you just defending
I'm going to defend hosts.
Okay. Bad hosts.
But I'm going to use... I don't think a bad host. I think like Conan...
Is a bad host.
Nope. I think Conan...
Because you love Conan O'Brien.
Nope. I do love a lot of Conan O'Brien.
You gave
O'Brien
it
stuff.
Away. Oh.
But I can love someone and also know their flaws.
Mm-hmm. That was a pointed look.
Conan's job
I'm reacting to that you
isn't
love me.
To serve the guests.
Ah.
The guests being served and treated well is wonderful.
Yeah.
Conan's job is to serve the audience. That's his job. So
he's got two jobs, and
again, you don't want to completely sacrifice the guest, but if you have an opportunity to do a joke that might hurt the guest's feelings a little bit.
That's fine.
But is a great joke that's going to delight the audience.
Yeah.
As the host,
you
now have to make a choice in your head and just go,
oh, no, that's fine.
Here
you can
we go.
Do that. You can do that. I'm okay with that. But what I'm not okay with is always bringing it back to you, which Conan does all the time.
Right.
Whenever anyone's talking, it's always, oh, I was doing that, or that's how it is for me, or look at my hair. My hair is crazy. I'm going to shake my head so you can see how crazy my hair is.
Now, he's been doing this for about 20 years, maybe 25.
Still shaking his head.
Could be 30.
Still shaking his head and his hair.
Let's just say at this point, that's what he fucking does, and that's who he is.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, so we're there.
So
that horse ain't going to change his stride.
I don't care. I'm just pointing out that as a negative, and I feel the same way about Fallon, as he does not, his guests will never shine. You know, it's okay if you both shine. That's great. If you have good jokes and the guest is given the opportunity to tell stories or to do whatever they're doing, that's great. But if it's only you and your guest sits there like a lump on the couch while you carry on for 5 minutes, who cares?
I mean, I think when I see that, it almost feels like a lot of times it's the responsibility of the talent coordinator who books the guests to sit with them, which they do beforehand, and just go, What's your story?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's what you need for this story. You need to shorten that.
Yeah.
You need to hit this.
Sure.
Conan will like this.
Yeah.
Here you go. And that's what they used to do with Carson. Johnny will love it if you talk about this. If you've got a magic trick you want to show him, oh boy. If you want to tell him a long story about the opera, you're in for he might come at you.
Yeah,
be careful.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so.
No, that's true. That's true. But I still think, like, if you watch old Carson's, you can see that it doesn't matter what the guest is, they look okay. They come out all right. They might get zinged. They might get zapped. They might get a couple jokes put at their expense. But, you know.
If you're the button king, he's going to make fun of you hard.
He's going to make fun of anyone. That's his job. I mean, the same with Letterman. That was his job.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like Fallon makes fun of people. Fallon just sycophantically laughs, you know, and, you know, has this constant crazy grin on his face.
Because that's what hosts do. And he's doing an impression of a host.
You know, he's basically a ventriloquist doll. He's Danny O'Day sitting there. And, you know, it's hollow. And
wow.
He's a phony.
We got the comparison to the Danny O'Day. Very nice.
I bring it around.
Well done. Good job.
Thanks very much. But what's also interesting about...
that was a sick burn on him, and thank goodness something just came by to tend to that sick burn. What was it? It's an ambulance.
Probably was.
It was.
Okay.
Did it
go by?
An ambulance just went by.
How did I miss it? I turned my head. I thought in time, but apparently not. I just want to say one more thing about Fallon and all the rest of it. Is that those shows
are too long.
It's not that those shows are too long.
They are, though.
Those shows' demographic is not Trump's demographic. So all those shows, by bringing Trump on, he alienated a huge a huge amount of people that he had previously appealed to because they don't like Trump. And now he put his imprimatur, is that a good word for that? His stamp on Trump, his I'm okay with Trump stamp on Trump. Jimmy Fallon approves of Trump.
Trump on Trump violence.
Trump. He put a stamp on there and said, I'm okay with this guy. You should be too. And Jimmy Fallon's audience said, fuck you. I don't like Trump. And so I don't like you either because you told me that you like this person. By having him on the show, you told me you like Trump. If Trump had, you know, and Trump would never go on Colbert because Colbert would not treat Trump kindly.
He went on Colbert.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, how come Colbert isn't getting the stink of this?
Because that's not how Colbert treated him.
Exactly.
Colbert stayed Colbert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and Trump did a weird thing where he went and sat down. Well, actually, I'll tell you something real quick.
Yeah, let me tell.
Which was Trump made a thing recently about like how he gave Colbert his biggest ratings, which he didn't. It was Jeb Bush gave him his biggest ratings.
Really,
so he went like, "You were beat by low energy Jeb." Just letting you know that. But when Trump
Poor
came
Jeb
on,
Bush.
Trump did his bad boy pose where he just sits with his legs spread, with his fingers tented, pointing downwards, and just sat there and took it, and just did that, no fighting back, no nothing, right? Gave him nothing, right? And just said a couple of things, and Colbert was, you know, not a mean host because he was like, you know, invited him in and whatever, and was trying to open things up to him, and he just was getting nothing really back for him, so got a couple of zingers in, but like afterwards he did say that he regretted not going at him harder because even back then he was the joke candidate and he was not going to be elected, and so, you know, it wasn't that big a threat, and then he felt, and that's what sort of reinvigorated him to just like, I just got to go full force right now.
Mm-hmm.
And also
where he comes out of that other show.
Daily Show?
The Daily Show.
Yeah. Though he comes out of The Daily Show, but he also comes out of, you know, being a Christian, being a Sunday school teacher. In many ways, he is, you know, has a lot of right-wing
elements.
Always
talking
about
Christianity.
He is, yeah.
You are.
Oh, me? Yeah. Oh, okay. But he does on the show, you know, and he's a very open Catholic person on the show, but still is fine with making fun of God and having a character play God and what have you. But
I don't like that, but that's fine.
You don't like a representation of God?
I don't think that's
good. A cartoon. How about in Holy Grail when John Cleese is playing God? Does that bother you?
John Cleese does not play God in the Holy Grail? You're talking about when the animation of
who plays God?
Oh, I'm not sure. Maybe it is him. I thought it was Terry Gilliam doing the voice, but maybe.
Well, it's definitely John Cleese when it's in Spamalot. Where it's, it's God's voice.
Okay.
But does that bother you in Holy Grail when he
No, I mean, it's just
God...
joking. I'm just kidding as well. I know he's playing on the ideas that already exist of God as an old guy in a cloud.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so he's got the cartoon version of God, but he also talks about God as God. And when people come on who are religious, he will discuss God on the show in a way that I don't think any other talk show host can. But like, I think that gives what he says a little bit more weight.
I've never really watched his show, to be honest with you.
That's okay. Yeah.
It's not that it's bad. It's just, I just haven't.
Now, I just heard a ding, dang, dong.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to make sure that we don't have anyone at the door who's come to see us today. Is that?
No, it's just telling me my parking expires in 10 minutes.
All right, fair enough, fair enough.
So don't worry about that, everyone.
All right, we'll wrap it up within
10 minutes. They can't tow me away yet.
We'll tell you a little secret, which is like Heather Gilbraith is coming by. Not on this episode, I'm sorry. Future episode, yeah. But she's got a new book that mm-hmm. both David and I are purchasing.
Yeah.
And because we're too cheap to use PayPal or any other service, she has had to physically come to Hellcatty Studios.
Walk over here.
And we're going to give her cash in hand.
On the barrel.
Like a common drug dealer. And she's going to leave. As every police officer.
I am better than a common drug dealer. I'm an uncommon drug dealer.
That's right.
Oh, she's the common drug dealer.
She is. We're the common junkies.
We're the common junkies. Well, that pretty much describes
my... Hey, we're the junkies.
That describes
people say
my,
we junkie around.
Describes my comic book buying
But we're
habits.
Going to be purchasing her new book. Mm-hmm. I wish I remembered the name of it. I can't remember the name of it. We'll plug it at some point later. But yabba dabba doo, we're going to just pay her cash for this book.
Yeah.
Because we always look forward to a new Heather Gilbraith book. And by the way...
Gilbraith,
sorry about that. Listen, everyone's got a last name.
Yeah.
Let's all just go by our first names, guys.
Sure.
It'll make things easier.
Much easier.
Got David. A whole bunch of great Kathleen Gross books at Van Camp
did you get
this
some?
Weekend. Oh, so many.
I couldn't be bothered.
You don't like her.
I walked by her table.
You don't care for her.
Walked by her table. I just thought,
Yeah.
She called out to me, but I was like, I don't have time for this.
Nope.
I am looking at other people's stuff that
You're trying to
know.
Catch Colin Upton's eye.
I was trying to, but
come
I couldn't.
Come hither, side glance.
I tried. I walked by his table 15 times, and he never looked at me once.
Oh, damn. That guy, what a snob.
I know.
The worst.
The worst.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
And right there, right around the corner was Hope Nicholson. Would she look at you in the eye? No, because you haven't met.
I've met her with you.
Oh,
which is the worst way to meet people.
Oh, that's right. We did meet.
Not that
in
you're the
Seattle.
Worst person to meet people with, but just that.
Yeah, because I always go, this is Dave. And then
dummy.
I run away. I pull your pants down. Then I run away. I am the worst
so
person at introducing people.
So embarrassing.
Yeah. That time we met
no,
the queen, that went
just,
so badly.
This is not a pity thing, but I'm going to say, I'm no one. So when I meet people with you, who is someone.
You're no one. That's what you are. One person.
I'm one person.
And one person is.
But I, and this is not a pity. It's just a fact.
No.
It's just a fact.
One.
That I am one person of many. And you are Ian Boothby. And so they're like.
Well, and I represent what? How many people do I represent?
Many people. Many people.
There's only two people that work in my company. And that's the only legal representation.
Fine. But you have established a name for yourself in various ways.
Uh-huh.
And I have not. And this is not pity. It's just a fact. And so when people meet me.
How many pieces of fan mail did you get this year? So far, how many?
But listen.
How many?
Listen.
More than 10?
Maybe.
Yeah.
But listen.
No, I think you got to listen to that.
Listen.
All right.
So when people meet me with you,
uh-huh.
or me, they just don't remember me.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm just a guy with you
right.
that they don't know.
Right.
And that's fine. I don't mind. I'm
okay.
just I'm used to the fact that when the next time they see me,
mm-hmm.
they will also say, I don't think we've met. And I will pretend that we have not
that's
met.
That's fair. I get a lot of that, too.
You do not.
I do. I do.
Boothby.
What I do get is, do you remember me? I'm like, oh, don't do that to me. That's such a dick
that's
move.
Different because
that's a dick move.
You have some trouble with people's faces.
Also, don't
names,
say that, period.
And
just say your name,
when I come
bro.
Here, when I say I'm here,
yeah.
you always say, who's here? Like, what? Who are you? Like when I go, hey, I'm here, you know, come down and pick, you know.
Yeah,
the door.
And I always say, new like, phone, who dis?
Yeah, every time. I'm like, well, how many new phones does this guy have? It's ridiculous.
Well, stop stealing my phones. Well, I'll tell you this. I was at Van Caff, and I was sitting down behind my little table. I had my little comics and realized I don't know if what I did was a good idea or not. And I'm there, and I had at least a dozen people go, how's Dave? What's up with Dave? Is Dave going to be around today? What's Dave?
Here?
Where's Dave?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you show. And at one point, someone's saying it while you're next to me and going, hey, where's Dave? And I went, there. And he went, oh! And it scared him.
Yeah,
it was like a David Lynch type situation.
We should shout out then to Rachel and Zoltan for coming by and saying hi. That was nice of you.
Well, shout out.
Because they said they wanted a shout out. So I'm going to
all right, shout out.
Shout out.
Shout out.
And while they were talking to us, they entered our contest.
Yes.
For the White Spot contest.
Which will be happening very shortly. Which is, if you want to have some White Spot with us, we'll treat. Just send us in your name and we'll put you in a draw and we'll figure that all out.
Yes, we have many people in the draw. But do not fear.
Many will enter. Few will win.
Few will win.
Fewer still will enjoy what they've won. Fewer than that will pay the bill because we're going to pay the bill for you.
Yeah.
Speaking of our contest we've got going on, and then we can do other things. We still, it's not really a contest, but we do this thing now.
Yeah.
Where you.
We want to hear from you.
Will give a soundtrack to a story people have.
Yes.
And the ones you've done so far have been fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
So if you call us, we'll tell you in a second how to do that. And tell us a story. It could be a secret origin story of something from your life.
Week, last
it
week
could be
Reed.
Something about how you found out about Sneaky Dragon or something connected with Sneaky Dragon.
Sure.
It could be one that got away. That could still be hanging around. Or, hey, you know what I miss? Could be one of those.
Oh, that's a good one, too.
Yeah.
I'm going to phone in.
So there you go.
I miss when the show is good.
I miss white dog poop.
White dog poop?
Yep.
The slugs crawling on it and getting to it? Is that the kind you mean?
So anyway, what you do is you just give us a send us an email, sneakyd@sneakerdragon.com. I'm not doing our whole last stuff, but it's sneakyd@sneakerdragon.com and give us an MP3 file. Yeah. You can do those on your phone.
Sure.
Or you can go to Skype and look up Sneaky Dragon. If you see other Sneaky Dragons, look for the one with our logo and leave us a message on there. About 2 minutes in length, and we'll do that.
Yes, you could do that. And last week, I was so happy that Reed told us a story that used the American phrase bounce house. Because I had a song that I downloaded many years ago. I was recommended on the Onion AV Club.
Yeah.
Recommended this weird YouTube video of some guys who I think are like kind of like smallish, you know, singers who are like, their career was kind of getting going or whatever. Sure. They did like a goofy... kind of pretend was real rap, but it was like a parody of a rap video with singing in it and a rap element called Bounce House. And so Reed mentioned Bounce House, and I was like, you know what? I have this song for some reason in my iTunes, and I'm going to use it.
Bam!
When in my life will I ever have a chance to once again put that song out there like that? Never.
You will get Dave to make a mixtape of your personal story.
Yes,
you know what?
That's right.
Hey, listen, an origin story. Let me throw this out there. If some of you are a couple, you could tell that story of how you met. Then what happens? Dave puts this soundtrack together. Lordy, lordy, who's got an anniversary present? For free.
For free. That's
for
true.
For free.
What am I doing this
Dave,
for?
Dave, professional mixtape man.
Yeah, professional. Sort of professional. I have so far sent out tape mixes of it's over 400 songs now that I've done.
There you go.
It's crazy.
There you go.
It's crazy.
It is crazy.
No repeats.
Crazy like a fox.
No repeats.
And Dave will also send a fax of anything you want to any location you want. That's another thing he'll do.
What?
Using old technology. Oh. He's done mixtapes, and he'll do fun faxes.
I do have a fax machine at home.
Sure. So what you do is you give Dave your phone number, and Dave will fax you.
It's a multi-use printer.
Yeah, multi-use printer. He will fax you. No, he won't do that. So, Dave, do we want to start wrapping up, or is there anything else going on happening?
No, I just brought that up because it seemed like a perfect segue there.
Perfect. Okay.
I'm a segue master.
Then why don't you wrap up our wonderful show? Because I wrapped up last week by mistake, and I'm so sorry.
You want me to wrap it up?
Sure.
Really?
Yeah. Because I wrapped it up by mistake.
Oh well, we already told about the contest, so I won't go into that again.
And we've given our email, which is sneakydragon.com, which we also take other email things from you and go, hey, write Dave a fan letter. He doesn't think people like him.
It's not that at all. I was just being realistic about how in this world. How well you're remembered by people, and which is not often that you're remembered, and that's okay. People might have a vague remembrance of you, but most times when you meet people at a con, everyone is in business mode. Everyone's selling.
They are a little focused.
Is super focused on their career at that time.
Also, people who are socially awkward are forced to be awkwardly social.
That's right. And so, in those moments when you meet people, you know they just don't remember you the way they would remember you. Because you are part of the industry. And so you have some element of that moment that... Gosh darn it.
There are a lot of ambulances.
People, be careful out there today.
Possibly. There's and what
but
I...
you know what I'm saying,
what
right?
What I get a lot of is this.
Yeah.
I had this so often, which is, hey, where do I know you from? That's always great.
People say that to you.
Oh, yeah.
That's a dumb thing to say.
And the answer usually is the Critical Hit Show or some comedy thing that they've seen.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's like, where do I know you from? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what your life is.
Yeah,
I don't know. It could be many things. Uh-huh. Now you're making me list all these things, and you're going to go, nope. Well, now I sound like an asshole because I've said three things that you do. Fuck. You know, which is why it's nice when I'm with my wife because she's way more famous than I am. Mm-hmm. I could just like coast because it's like everyone goes and talks to her. She, by the way, she had a cartoon on Frontline this weekend.
I saw that. I saw her Facebook about it.
Yeah, she. There was a thing about you know that the guy who's evil, Steve Bannon.
Steve Bannon.
And so she did a cartoon about him, and so they had it up there. They did not give her credit.
That's too bad.
She contacted them, as did many other people, going like, "Hey, where's the credit?" Frontline wrote back, "Went, we're really sorry. We should have gave you credit, and we're really nice about it."
Oh,
so
that's nice.
There you go.
They could have done a simple Google image search and found out who did the drawing.
They could have.
I assume they have a research staff. They are presenting news.
I was saying we should get Dateline on it and go after Frontline. Mm-hmm. Really confront them on that situation. That's right. Or at least we should get, because it's on PBS, a tote bag.
A tote bag.
Frontline tote bag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I said, don't make me contact the Chubb group about this.
Let's just talk about a little bit more about VanCalf.
Okay, sure.
VanCalf is interesting to me because...
Vancouver Comics Arts Festival.
That's right. And, you know, it is, like you say, it's a lot of people who are maybe a little introverted. I don't think all comic book artists are introverted.
Nope.
But I think a good many are, because it takes a certain personality type to want to sit by yourself for long periods of time and just do something focused. That takes a certain kind of personality, and often that's an introverted personality.
Not your always personality, you have probably, in getting ready for VanCalf, have just been spending the last couple of weeks really doing it.
Yeah.
So you spent a lot of time away from people, and now you're hyper out there into a large group of people all want to talk.
So I came, I got there a little late because I got my hair cut first, and then I drove into town and made the mistake of going down the wrong street because I want to go to the bank and get some money. And that took me the...
Do you still exchange your hair for money? Are you still able to do that?
No.
Okay,
no,
fair enough.
I didn't do that. This is two separate things that I did.
Oh, I understand.
Sorry, you're confused.
Bag of hair for bag of cash? Sure thing.
And then
that bank went out of business.
So I guess I got there around 11. Does that sound right?
Sounds about right.
You had your watch on, right?
I got there at 10, yeah.
I showed up.
No one has a watch anymore.
It was absolutely packed with people. Like, it was crazy, the amount of people there. It was like uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable. Like, I felt like, oh, I just want to go. I just want to leave here now. But it's, you know, I want to do other things too. So I was looking for you guys, looking for Pia, you and Nina, because I knew you were together, and James.
Yeah. James Lloyd.
Yep. I was looking for you. I walked past some people that I knew. Robin Bougie, former friend of the show, was there with his wife, Rebecca.
Dart.
I walked past them, and I'm going to give away an earlier little joke that I did talk to Kathleen Gross. She called out to me and I made a beeline for her table, bought some of her stuff there. Bought some great stuff from her. All really good. All her books are great.
Yeah.
Particularly enjoyed
her. And also different too.
Yeah.
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 Wide variety of styles.
Yeah. Yeah. I particularly enjoyed Husband Material.
I went too late for that. That was sold out.
Oh, I should have brought you to...
And she would draw you as a vaping werewolf.
She would do that. I did not pay the $20 for that because I do not need myself drawn in that way. But... now that I think about it, I regret it. Darn it. Next time. Next time, I hope she's doing that. So then I wandered around. Yes, I saw Colin Upton. Could not catch his eye. He was, every time I passed by there, he was talking to people. And so I didn't get to say hi to Colin.
Yep.
But I don't want to interrupt. If you were selling, if you're doing your job at the show, I don't want to interrupt you. I want you to do your job. I want you to sell to people. I did talk to Robin and Rebecca, which is good. I bored them by complaining about continuity. I talked to Nina. Nina gave me a couple stickers. And so I took a couple stickers from her. I wish I'd taken more stickers, but I felt bad taking just two stickers. But I took two stickers. One said, I'm a great artist. It's too bad about all that anime crap.
Yeah.
Which is worse
than this anime crap.
Yeah. Another one was ignore the anime packaging, which I didn't take that one. I wish I had of now, but it's too late.
Yeah, it's too late. You'll never see Nina again.
I'll never see Nina
again. You're not coloring a book that she's working on at all. You have no contact with her whatsoever.
I don't even know her.
Yeah. There's a big wall between the colorist and the illustrator of books.
But once again, Nina was really busy, and so I couldn't talk to her long
because she's
doing her job.
She's
there.
Crazy talented. God damn it.
And I'm not going to buy anything from her. I'm too cheap. So,
I just expect to be given stuff. If you just give her money, it'll just encourage her.
Yeah, yeah. So I left her to her own devices. It was a great show. It was a great show.
I will agree with that.
I picked up a bunch of stuff there.
Yep. And we were in the exhibition area. There was a gym area. And apparently the gym area got insanely hot later on. And people were just sweating quite a good deal. We were in the nice area with the open door.
Yes, you were in the round part right over the house.
Here's what I really liked as compared to other cons. Afterwards, no one gets a horrible cold because we're not in a basement with the air recirculating.
Yeah.
We have fresh air.
That's
right. No one gets sick. How about that, other cons?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Wrap up the show because we got to say hi to
that's right. Shortly. That's right.
And your car is probably going to be towed.
Ooh, shit. So everyone, go to our webpage. It's called sneakydragon.com. Leave a comment there. I love to read your comments. And sometimes I even have time to respond to you and say thank you. And thank you, by the way, to everyone who wrote in with ghost songs. We got a lot of them.
Yeah.
Thank you. Because, you know, it's hard when we're doing the show. It really is hard because we're thinking about what we said, already said. We're thinking about what we're going to say. And then we're also talking at the moment. So our minds are so, like, filled with thoughts that it's hard to remember like little things like Wuthering Heights by Kate Bush, one of my favorite songs, and I totally forgot about that song being sung by a ghost.
And I thought the Boo Man Group was a group of ghosts. Apparently, I was just mispronouncing the Blue Man Group.
Yes, there you go, dummy. You can go to our Facebook page and get mad at me for calling Ian a dummy. It's Sneaky Dragon. It's very simple. You just go there and like it. And if you like it, then you will occasionally get things, notifications of what we did.
Yeah, you can visit the ghost version of our other long dead podcasts, Completely Beatles and Totally Tintin as well on Facebook.
You know what? I don't think I liked that page because I don't get any notifications for Sneaky Dragon. Okay. When you post stuff there, I don't even know about it.
It's weird. I do feel like I put stuff there and like Dave doesn't care.
Yeah, but it's because I don't know.
I'll have to go check it every so often.
And maybe I'll get things.
Make yourself an administrator.
I am an administrator.
Well, make that point. Keep going. We gotta go see somebody.
Chief Financial Officer, CFO. Nope. You can, what else can you do? Go to Twitter, Sneaky_Dragon. We are there to be talked to. Thank you, Thomas, for sending a picture of a ladle. No, sorry, it was a spaghetti thingy that looked a lot like Sneaky Dragon.
Oh, that was no ladle. That was my wife. Keep going.
You should have said wifeful. Anyway.
Should have said knife. God damn it, knife. Hey, was that a ladle?
Wait, say it again.
That was no ladle. That was my knife.
Ah, so good.
Fuck.
I'll tweet about it later. And also, we have a Patreon where you can support the show. You can support it. You can send us $1 a month. And that helps us underwrite the ongoing costs of being a podcast, which includes paying to put the show up. Because we are so darned popular, we can't just put it on the website. Otherwise, it crashes it. So we have to like pay someone else to
sort it for us. And keeps us in gum and our
it's
breath.
Crazy. And
it's
also,
fresh.
That's nice, too. That is also nice, too. And so, yeah, that's it. I think I've listed everything, right? Twitter, Facebook, Patreon, Tumblr. We're on Tumblr, Sneaky Dragon. And who cares? It's all a bunch of garbage.
That's how you want to end the show?
That's right. Everyone, my indifference.
We're phonies.
Is
we're a couple of real phonies.
We're not real. We are as honest as the day isn't long. Folks, thank you very much for listening to our nonsense. We love to hear from We love to hear from you too. We love to hear from all of you.
We love to hear from the publishers of the magazine We from the 1980s. The very sexy ladies' magazine We.
I don't think it was a ladies' magazine. I think it was a men's magazine.
Well, it was about ladies.
Featuring ladies.
There was ladies in it.
There was not about ladies. It featured ladies.
It's no more about ladies
than Hustler magazine was.
I couldn't speak French, so I have no idea.
What it was about.
No.
Oui. Everyone, that's the end of the show. I think we should just end right there and end it all. We'll end ourselves as well. All right. See you next week.
Bye.